the top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone, welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Milwaukee, right across from the convention center here at the RNC. It's really one of the Fox hubs. We got two of the least around. Yeah, I would say we have two booths over in the convention center. We got two separate locations here in Milwaukee, and it's a lot of fun. Great people, as you know, and fantastic people in the right mindset, determined to take back power in Washington, but they're doing it first in Milwaukee. And we've been here before. I'm getting deja vu because we've been here for debates. Mark Lauder is going to be going to hear from him in a matter of moments. Alexi Lalas, Fox Sports soccer analyst, best in the world, certainly the best in our country. He wants to come out. He wants to experience this thing and see what it's about, get more politically active while keeping his hand firmly in sports with his eye on the World Cup. And then Eric Trump at the bottom of the hour. And your number to call, we'll try to squeeze some calls in, 1-866-408-7669. Last night was pretty special. Things that stand out for me. Number one, Nikki Haley came out per first, not invited, but take my delegates. Then invited, take my delegates. Would she endorse? The answer is absolutely. Was she enthusiastic? Yes. And I thought her message was cool. It was, I know some of you don't agree with everything that Trump does, but get on board. We got to be a big tent. Ron DeSantis knocked it out of the park. He was fired up, and Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders brought up the personal side that she witnessed as press secretary with Donald Trump. Just interesting. Those are just some of the highlights as regular people came out and told their harrowing stories. Mark Lauder was there, former director of strategic communications with Trump Pence over in 2020 and 2016 had a significant role. Mark, welcome.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
I think the day two was excellent. I think they accomplished their goals. The people responded well. Where were you? What do you think?
You know, I was bouncing through all those various the Fox News booths, that there are so many of them, and all the other places. But, you know, I think the big takeaway was the word unity, whether it was Nikki Haley, whether it was Ron DeSantis. We're really seeing a party coming together. I heard someone say, I don't think we'd had a unified party since the 2004 convention. We would have in 2020, but obviously COVID, you know, stopped there from being a convention. But it was very contested in 16.
Yeah, and back to 2004 was Bush for re-election.
It was Bush for re-election. I mean, a lot of people weren't on board with McCain. A lot of people weren't on board with Romney in 08 and 12. So this is really the first time
in 16,
years.
Lot of people were not on board with President Trump.
Correct. So this is like the first time in 20 years this party has gotten together behind one person, one name, and last night just sealed that deal. We're going forward all with Donald Trump.
All right. Here's what Nikki Haley said. I thought she had an important message, and I asked the campaign, you know this. They said every line on every speech, big and small, doesn't matter the time, prime time or afternoon, has been looked at and analyzed. So there's going to be no surprises from Nikki Haley. They also made sure she was warmly received because a lot of people saw how ugly it got. Cut to.
We should acknowledge that there are some Americans who don't agree with Donald Trump 100% of the time. I happen to know some of them, and I want to speak to them tonight. My message to them is simple. You don't have to agree with Trump 100% of the time to vote for him. Take it from me. I haven't always agreed with President Trump, but we agree more often than we disagree.
I like that message. It's definitely appropriate to who she is because you don't want to be pretend as if they weren't dropping the gloves for 4 or 5 months.
No, absolutely. And I also think that's one of the untested things or undiscussed things about J.D. Vance. He can now go into Pennsylvania. He can come into Wisconsin, Michigan, and he can say, look, I was just like you. I had concerns in 2015, 2016. But then I looked at the records in office. I looked at the policies. I looked at their plans for the future, and I got on board. Come on in. The water's fine.
Right. Do you like the pick?
I love the pick. And the other thing I don't
think... Would it have been your pick?
It would have been my pick for a couple of reasons. Number one, Joe Biden said he was going to be the bridge to the next generation. Now he refuses to give up power, even though his own party is trying to throw him overboard. Donald Trump just proved, guess what? I am that bridge. Here is the next generation. So if you're one of those young Americans, the polls are showing that they're moving drastically to Donald Trump's favor. Now you see one of your own up there on the platform, name right next to Donald Trump's, and saying 4 years from now, this generation is taking over. I've given you the roadmap.
Cut 10 is Sarah Huckabee Sanders. A little of that emotion that we saw.
When the president hired me, I was the first mom and only the third woman to ever serve as the White House press secretary. And in that role, I endured relentless attacks from the left. I was insulted as a guest at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And when an MSNBC host, the author of several books on empowering women, said I was unfit to be a mother, and another MSNBC host said I was vile, but our president pulled me aside, looked me in the eye, and said, Sarah, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're tough, and they attack you because you're good at your job. Never let them stop fighting.
So that's important. Bring out that personal side.
That's the stuff that people don't get to see, and it was so great. Obviously, I was the vice president's press secretary when she was the White House press secretary, so I know Sarah so well. And these are the stories that we about Donald Trump that we have come to know that the regular people don't get to see. It's just a character on television, on the liberal media. But this is the man. You've gotten to know him, obviously, over the years. We see that personal side. I always joke that it's you can tell he owns golf courses and hotels because no matter where you are, he's always interested in the guest experience. Even if you're at a meeting,
really?
Are you comfortable, Mark? I'm like, no, I'm not comfortable. I'm sitting in the Oval Office with you.
Yeah.
Who's comfortable? But he wants a, do you need a Diet Coke? And there's something we can get you. And that's the man that I got to know. Sarah obviously knew him so much better. And I think the stories last night, I know the stories are coming even more tomorrow night in the run-up to his speech.
Right.
And I think that personalizes him in a way.
So one thing that's pretty clear from KJP, Tony Snow made it clear that if I'm not going to be press secretary unless I can be in on the meetings. I need to know what goes on. When people ask me questions, I don't want someone distilling it from me. I need to hear it. And Bush said yes. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was in those meetings and was almost an advisor. So when she stood in front of the people, she knew instinctively what I could say, but she also knew. I get the sense that KJP has nothing to do with the White House. I don't like she is just answering questions, but she's not trying to help the media understand because she doesn't get the information from the president. You're the pro, though. Do you get that same sense she's not in the meetings?
Absolutely. You have to be in that meeting so when a reporter asks you about one some leaked quote, you can say, I was in there, that didn't happen. Or here's the actual context of what was happening. Sarah was great at that. I remember Ari Fleischer pulling me aside shortly after the 16 election, and he said, rule number one, do not let anyone come into your office and give you facts with some newspaper account or something. I want to see the data behind the facts. You have to be in the room. You have to know what's going on, because if you don't, and once you lose credibility behind that podium, you're never getting it back.
What about the relationship between Trump and Pence? January 6th, obviously, we can debate that forever, and people do every single day, 20 times a day. But what caused the fracture between them, it seems, was the pro-life stance, where the president said, I want to return to the states, and he said, no, we should be pro-life. That should be our stance.
Yeah, I think the problem with that is that we are pro-life, but right now...
But am I right? You know these both these men.
Right. I do think that's one of the big issues.
Or is it fundamentally January 6th?
I mean, I think it was fundamentally January 6th, but I think now it has moved on into other areas. And when I look at this, I mean, Donald Trump's position on this is that he is pro-life. Our party is still pro-life. Neither side is ever going to pass a bill in the Congress that's going to deal
with
this.
That's what Nikki Haley said.
That's what, and it's true. No one's getting 60 votes on either side of this discussion. So it belongs with the people in the states. And if somehow we can get a huge run up to having 60 votes in the Senate, then let's have that discussion. But right now, let's deal with reality.
So Mark Lauder, my guest. Mark, I was looking at some of the stats. As much momentum as Donald Trump has, and he has it, as good as the polls look, it's not transferring to the Senate candidates. Tim Sheehy is still about 4 or 5. I saw a poll today that Dave McCormick's trailing by 11 in Pennsylvania. I hope that's an outlier because he seems to be a great candidate, especially on paper and in person. And then you have a situation where Tammy Baldwin is winning in Wisconsin. Outside West Virginia and the surprise of Larry Hogan in Maryland, are you worried about the Senate?
I still am worried about the Senate. I do think in Montana and Ohio, those races are still very winnable. And I think the one thing...
Bernie Moreno says nobody knows him yet.
And that's true. So, and when you get Trump on the ballot, that's going to change things. I mean, no poll has ever overestimated Trump support. They always underestimate it. And I think as we get into this campaign, right now he is sealing the deal as the presidential candidate. What you'll start to see is J.D. Vance, you'll start to see Donald Trump going into some of these Senate districts and saying, if you vote for me, you need to send me a partner in the United States Senate or in the Congress.
Right.
And when people go to vote for Trump, they know to also check that next box down.
Right.
Not going to show up right now, but I think it's favorable.
Mark Lauder, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Good
thanks
to see
for
you.
Coming in.
Yeah.
It's going to be an exciting next 2 days. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show in Milwaukee, right across from the convention center. And we come back, Alexi Lalas, and then Eric Trump. You listen. Don't move.
Stay tuned for more of Brian Kilmeade, live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, next.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox & Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump has not just transformed our party. He has inspired a movement. A movement of the people who grow our food and drive our trucks. The people who make our cars and build our homes. The people whose taxes fund our government and whose children fight our wars.
Mark, he was a finalist to the point where a lot of people think the president was set to name him. Then when his son came in and Don Jr. and lobbied hard for J.D. Vance, that switched it at the last minute. Plus, it was his fear of litigation. Should they win with two residents from the same state? With me right now is Alexi Lalas. You know him from soccer fame, Fox Sports lead soccer analyst, who played how many years for the national team?
Alexi? Oh, geez. Let's see. It would have been like 93 or 92 to 98. I don't know. Through the 90s.
Through the 90s.
In the previous century.
How long were you a pro?
Until about 33. So from, you know, you're 20 to 33.
13
so.
Years.
Yeah.
And then at Fox Sports Analysis. People think of you in soccer and athletics, but you wanted to see this.
Yeah.
And you're here in the Fox booth in the Fox News area. Yeah. What are you looking to see? Right now?
I think, you know, the reason I'm here in Milwaukee is to satisfy a curiosity they had. And maybe there's people out there that would say it's a morbid curiosity, but I am a registered Republican in the great state of California. I have a faith in my party, but it's not a blind faith. And so in a certain sense, I wanted to come out here and maybe affirm or validate or dispel things. And 2 days in, so far, so good. The
right.
conversations that I've had, the people that I've seen speak, it's been gratifying and it's been interesting to see. And, you know, whether it's the people on the stage giving speeches, whether it's at the bar at night, wherever it is, we were just talking on air a little while ago about, you know, the stereotype that exists when it comes to Republicans and certainly the right side of the political spectrum, and to dispel some of those myths is important. And you know, I live in California. I work in soccer. I'm like a unicorn when it comes to,
yeah.
to politics out there. And yet, there are a lot of things that can unite us. And I think there's a lot of things that, when we have those types of personal and human conversations, that you do have a lot in a convention like this. You come to agreement on a lot of things. I know there's a little bit of
right.
you know, preaching to the choir here at a convention,
but
it's still
good. I'll drill down on a little bit. So if I was to go to a convention 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
prior to Trump, it was all about free trade. Yeah, if you're against free trade, that's what we want, an open market. We
right.
want to compete with other countries. It was also about, you know, where they're anti-union. They're pro-worker, anti-union. Want nothing to do with that. Okay. And then when it came to marriage, traditional marriage, that's it. Same-sex marriage, well, you can tolerate it. Let's not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now Trump went out of his way and said, get that out of here. As much as I agree, I have nothing against gay marriage. I want it out. When it comes to pro-life, you know what happened on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I return to the states. Why are we putting this in our platform? Let's take it out. So he narrowed it down from multiple pages, like 80 pages, to maybe 10 or 15. That's very different. I watched the union president of the Teamsters give a speech, Sean O'Brien.
Exactly.
So if someone says, I'll tell you what a Republican is, Lexi, your answer should be, what time is it?
Right.
What day is it? What year is it?
But that's okay. It doesn't.
Yes.
Being fluid and changing and growing and evolving is part of a human. It's part of a party. But to your point, you know, I flew in and I was watching the Monday night, and to your point, the Teamsters president. I thought it was
Sean O'Brien.
Yeah, and it was just an amazing, because I was watching it on television, and you know, Fox had the two box. And Trump is on one side. Obviously, he's not speaking. So it's just a completely reactive type of picture. And, you know, the Teamster president is napalming everybody in front. And yet it ended up looking good for the GOP, and it ended up looking good for Trump in that, to your point again, there has been an evolution, and there has been a willingness to change, and a pragmatism when it comes to Trump, in that it, just because I believe something doesn't mean I can win on it. And you do have to be reflective of your party. And it doesn't mean that you're wishy-washy, and Trump certainly isn't. But there is a pragmatism, I think, too, that politicians need and that Trump shows on a continual basis.
And it's to evolve, too. A lot of times, for example, free trade, great idea during the 80s. And everyone said, let's do it. It'll keep products low. If I can make them in Mexico, when by the time they get here, it's going to be great for the consumer. But they didn't anticipate manufacturing going everywhere except in America. And you go to a place like Milwaukee, and they say, we used to have all these breweries. We used to have all this manufacturing here. We still have some, but it just went away. And remember Ross Perot said that giant sucking sound in the 1980s? And that's what he meant. Jobs are going to go. It turns out he was right. Wasn't intentional. So Trump came in and said, we're bringing it all back here. They said, well, it was too expensive. Well, that's because unions make it too high. So let's examine what unions are doing and not doing. And now he says, I deal with the unions all my life. Don't worry about unions.
Yeah. And having that type of relationship, even with, you know, a group that doesn't necessarily agree with you, and like I said, very publicly criticize both parties, it has to be said.
Are you worried about people looking at Lexi Lalas and saying that's the Republican instead of that's the soccer analyst?
Oh, I don't care about that. It's not a pejorative. It doesn't make me a bad person, despite what people will say. I am confident in who I am as a person, and if people want to talk politics, that's wonderful. I can do it in a civil and respectful way. I have plenty of friends that certainly disagree with me when it comes to my political views, but they are my friends. And that they can disagree with me politically and still be my friends is probably why they are my friends. Because there's a lot of people nowadays that as soon as you say something like that, it is poison. It poisons the air.
When I was harassing you, was doing all sports, it would be the back page first, even though we all read online now.
Sure.
Do you read the front page first or the back page?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
News first for you.
Absolutely news and politics. And, you know, there are a lot of parallels when it comes to sports. And, you know, we've talked about the tribalism that exists. And
game plans, strategies.
All that kind of
acting
stuff.
Acting under pressure.
Right. The analysis that goes into every single word that's said and why is it this and the long-term strategy, the short-term strategy, the passion that it evokes, the disagreement that it evokes, the winners and the losers, and the scoreboard up there. All those different things. Obviously, much more serious and important.
But you know what's great about sports? They shake hands at the end of the game, and they hug it out at the end of the fight. And then we got to learn to do that.
Yep. Amen, my friend.
Right. Great to see you. How do you get your podcast?
The State of the Union podcast is twice a week over there, and you can get it on all the different the platforms out there.
When we come back, we talk soccer next, because we need a coach for the national team.
We got things to do. We
starting
got
things with the to do.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Now imagine this. Eric and I have been so far back in the woods on top of a mountain, and I blew the tire out on the back of my 4x4, and who was under the vehicle right then? Eric Trump. Eric Trump changed the tire. Donald Trump has taught his kids the very best.
I love the personal stories that you never would get unless you get Governor Jim Justice, who wants to be Senator Jim Justice of West Virginia, who loves the outdoors, and so does Eric Trump. My guest is Eric Trump. Eric, do you remember this moment?
This was one of the great moments of my life. I went down, so Jim Justice owns the Greenbrier, and obviously we're in the hotel world, and so I go down to West Virginia to see the Greenbrier Hotel, and that's obviously...
Which, by the way, we have a great feature on Fox Nation of the Greenbrier.
It had the famous nuclear bunkers under it. It was where Congress was going to go.
If there was a nuclear war,
they're going to go to the Greenbrier, and it's totally hidden out of sight, and finally, I think in the 90s, New York Times. But anyway, Jim Justice owns it, so he wants to show me his farm next door. So we're off-roading on this farm. We're both in suits. I'm in a beautiful suit. He's in a beautiful suit. And he loses the front tire. And Jim's a big boy. No. I mean, he hits a rock.
He's 6'7", maybe 350.
At least, right? He might be taller than that, and he might be. I love Big Jim. That's why we call him Big Jim, right? He's just a great. He's one of the kindest human beings ever. So anyway, I grab one of his, Dickies overalls. These are 3XL. I put them on over the thing, and I go under the car, and he gave me this beautiful Greenbrier book. I put the jack stand on this Greenbrier book. I'm jacking up his Suburban. He's eating candy in the front seat. I go, Jim, I'm literally under your truck. Stop shaking your truck. The last thing, you're going to crush a Trump in the face with your Suburban on the side hill. But anyway, I changed the governor's tire, and we've been dear friends ever since. And he's a wonderful guy, and I think he's going to win that seat handedly.
Yes. He was a Democrat.
I know.
And he got to know your dad when he was president. He said, I'm switching. And he did it on our show.
So can I out him? Because now that he's outing me about changing tires while he eats candy in the Suburban.
Right.
He said to me, he goes, Eric, I and this was when he was Democrat. He goes, Eric, I really believe in your father. I am in line with every policy. And if I win this, and if your father wins this, I'm going to change parties. And I called him up, and this was maybe a month or two after, my father, everything kind of settled in. And I said, hey, you're still ready to do that? He goes, I'm ready to do it. So we all fly down to White Sulphur Springs, and Jim comes out, and he's effectively announces that he's changing from, being a Republican governor to a Democratic governor to a Republican governor. And it got zero media coverage. I mean, the media.
No, we were.
Well, Fox. Okay, fine. Fox. But among the country, they just couldn't handle this just rabid defeat of a governor, changing political affiliation. It was just such a blow to their ego. But that was a proud moment.
Your dad won by 40 points or something in West Virginia. You had Joe Manchin, a Democrat, and you had a Democratic governor. And you know what? Joe Manchin and Senator Sinema, and they did a lot. I mean, they stood up. They stopped the packing of the court. They stopped the end of the filibuster. So I give them credit. They've effectively said, I'm from a red state. I can't just pretend as if I can go wrong with these policies. But now Manchin says I can't compete with Jim Justice, and he's going to win handily. Are you worried about – I know you break this down. Normally I would keep it to the president, but I know you care about this too, because one of the things I heard from a key member of your campaign was to win the presidency without the Senate, it's going to be more than frustrating because they're going to try to impeach right away.
Yeah.
So are you worried about Pennsylvania? There might be a double-digit deficit now, according to the latest poll. And I think Dave McCormick's a fantastic candidate. Are you worried about Montana, where he's about 4 or 5 points down? Tammy Baldwin's winning in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Listen, I look from the top of the ticket down, and a lot of people look from the bottom of the ticket up. And, I think an incredibly strong president, kind of raises the tide for everybody. And I think you have to have the best people. Yeah, I've always said that the biggest focus of any party should be recruiting. I mean, you go in, you get
but you
Nick
do get
Saban,
some good candidates. I mean,
no, there's no question about it. We have incredibly strong candidates, and I think we're going to win. I really believe we're going to hold all three. I do, and I think my father's going to win in a major way, assuming that funny business isn't happening. And but make no mistake, Brian. I never like to play from being ahead. And it feels like we have the wind at our
you
back right now.
You have never been ahead. I mean, you shocked everyone in the primaries, and then it was a little bit of a surge in 2015, and then you win, and then people are like, oh, I'm not going along with this. The Never Trumpers came out. They made it a very hostile environment in 2016 at the Republican convention compared to conventions.
Well, here's why. Here's why I don't like to play from ahead. Right? They always have their – and I'm telling everybody right now that's listening to this, there will be an October surprise. Just remind yourself that Eric Trump said this on Brian Kilmeade's show. There will be an October surprise because it is their playbook. They've done it for the last 40 years. And, they define it as an October surprise being, something that they pop on you, that they get the entire mainstream media to run with for a period of 3 weeks, is so sensational that it hurts you, and that you don't have time to disprove because you're too close to the election to disprove and turn around. And by the time you disprove it, the damage is already done. The Democrats do it every single time. They did it with the Russia nonsense. They do it every time. they always have a trick up their sleeve.
Right.
Right? And everybody's like, you know what's going to happen with Biden? Is he going to make it to the finish line? I don't know. You know why? Because they always have a trick up their sleeve. They always have something there. They always have their October surprise.
Well, they had the Access Hollywood, but then she got her emails caught up with Uma Abedin and Wiener, so that kind of neutralized things.
Well, you know what? I think people have become desensitized to this because they understand the games of the parties. They understand the games of these, you know, the political animals and – but I just never like to play like you're ahead, right? They always have something up their sleeve. They're always conspiring in the background.
I understand.
You know, they're smart as hell. They're evil as hell. It's almost hard to believe coming out of the business world that this is kind of the way people can act, but it is. I mean, power is very much corrupting. And, you know, so I never like to play like you're ahead. I never like to think that you have momentum at your back. I actually like to run like we're behind.
So on Saturday to Sunday, we watched the special coverage of the assassination attempt, and it was real. The New York Times caught it, the screaming bullet ricocheting off your dad's face. I never thought that was even possible, that there were shows of speed like that. And we see all the drama, and they decide, the NBC decides, I can't have Morning Joe on. So they lie to him, and they say, we're going to have NBC News coverage on all our platforms, CNBC, MSNBC, and NBC News. It turns out they only pulled Morning Joe. What's your reaction?
Well, you know what? I knew those two, and it hurts. They know exactly who we are as people. You know, they know how great of a person my father is. They know me personally, and every single day I hear them spew their nonsense, and it's just kind of infuriating. Now, I don't think anybody watches that show, and I don't think they take them seriously anymore as journalists because they're just, you know, they're so wild and crazy. But, you know, what happened that day was unthinkable. I mean, we almost had a, you know, former president, very likely to be future president, assassinated on live TV, you know, while millions and millions of people were watching on every network across the country and, frankly, around the world. And, you know, it's hard to believe that could ever happen.
Their company did not feel trust them enough to be deferential at that moment.
Yeah, of course.
Isn't that crazy?
Of course they didn't. And they were afraid of the ramifications. But, frankly, the same thing's happening with Biden. I mean, the American people have been spoon-fed nonsense. And they didn't believe the nonsense, by the way. But they've been spoon-fed nonsense by the mainstream media. I'm not including Fox in this. But literally, you know, for the last 4 years, that, you know, Biden is the equivalent of the modern Einstein. And that, you know, he's got a great, you know, he may as well have been Hemingway. And it's all crap. And people knew it was crap. Everybody knows it was nonsense. And then, sure enough, after hearing this 4 years and after having him covered by the media for a four-year period of time, he comes out on that debate stage. He hardly makes a podium. He's gazing up at the sky. Nothing is registering. He can't get through a sentence. He didn't get a single number in the debate right. He literally can't figure out where commas go. He can't he can't tell the difference between a million and a billion and a trillion or a thousand. I don't know why it doesn't register, but he flubbed every single number in that debate. And it was just a total train wreck. It was the worst debate that anybody's ever had in probably American history on one side and probably the best on the other side. And I think the media lost real credibility there. It's like, we can't cover for this guy anymore. It doesn't work.
And it happened just a drop of a hat, and he wanted that debate. I want you to hear, so your dad escapes what he said to the New York Post, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So it didn't take long till people not only were over the near-death experience, but were commenting on the bandages. Listen to Cut 27.
There are a lot of questions around that ear, and yet there's been no response to that. Instead, just showing the image of the man coming into the hall with the wounded ear.
A spectacle for this candidate who we know is, by his own admission, obsessed with assorted spectacles. There is a political quest here to mine and use Donald Trump's injury, and whether his allies and Republicans or the candidate himself do that in a way that overextends their credibility will be decided by the voters.
What is your reaction? I mean, is that I'm stunned. I heard it for the first time.
Brian, it's infuriating. I sat there with a six-year-old child on my lap and a four-year-old child on my lap, and I almost saw my father's head get taken off based on pure incompetence, based on the fact that a roof at 130 yards was totally unguarded. And this isn't like a small roof. This is was totally unguarded and left open. By the grace of God, he turned his head. It took off the backside of his ear. He had blood running down his face. When asked Biden about it, he said he spoke to his Secret Service director, not understanding that his Secret Service director was actually a female. I mean, he said he spoke to him, not realizing it was actually a female. Then that Secret Service director said that the reason that they didn't have anybody on the roof was that it was a pitched roof. Yet the roof that the Secret Service snipers are on, that they actually took the guy out from, had a much steeper pitch to it than the actual roof. This is the incompetence that we're dealing with, and you almost had a former president assassinated on live TV. Civil wars in countries have been started for less than that. Think about the standing that America would have had having a person get shot in the head, somebody as revered as Donald Trump around the world. That would have made our country look like a bunch of jokers. And this is the narrative that they're on. Could you imagine if the reverse happened to Obama? Could you imagine if the reverse happened to, you know, Clinton?
Can you imagine me going, under, I don't think he needs a bandage.
Under
that
a Trump administration, they would have been calling for his resignation. Not only would they be calling for the resignation of the Secret Service director, they'd be calling for my father's resignation had the reverse happened.
So listen to what you're talking about. The United States Secret Service director is a woman, Kim Cheadle, and was asked about what's the problem with that roof. Cut 28.
Should that roof have been secure, period?
That building in particular has a sloped roof at its highest point. And so, you know, there's a safety factor that would be considered there, that we wouldn't want to put somebody up on a sloped roof. And so, you know, the decision was made to secure the building from inside.
Feel better?
It's insane. The roof that the counter snipers were on, and I know these guys. I spent a lot of time shooting with them. This is kind of a hobby of mine, right? I know the world very, very well. The roof that the counter snipers were on was significantly steeper. Their tripod, these really right stuff tripods, are set up at the top of the roof at a steep angle. That's why the guy was using that three-legged tripod, because he's right on the apex of that roof. And that roof was much steeper than the other roof. Give me a break. This is the incompetence that we're dealing with. And I almost lost my father because of this incompetence, and they better get to the bottom of it.
Well, what does it tell you, just think this out, that they were able to kill him almost right away? They had to have eyes on him. I mean, they blew him up. They blew his head off.
The sad thing is no one actually believes that this investigation is going to be done fairly. You know, 10 years ago, if you would have said that the FBI was going to run this investigation, I would have said it was going to be totally impartial. You know, the facts were going to lead the way and that it was going to be honest to the American people. I was the guy that got the call about the Russia scam. You know, I hear you have Secret Service that are connected to the Kremlin in Moscow from Trump Tower. I go,
this was in the between winning and taking over?
Yeah, this was
between
this was in November and
January?
That's right. This was in 2016, 2017, early 2017. I hear you have Secret Service, Eric, that are connected from the basement of Trump Tower to the Kremlin. First of all, we don't have servers in the basement. Second of all, we're like cloud-based computing, right? So if you get back, you don't put servers in basements because basements flood, right? Let's just start at the basics. The FBI knew that was nonsense, and they did nothing for 3 years. They let a Russia hoax hang over my father's head for a three-year period of time. Does anybody actually believe? And I love the men and the women, the gun carriers in the FBI, the greatest sure. people in the world. I have a lot of those friends. But does anybody actually think that the leadership of the FBI is going to take this seriously or is going to be impartial? No one does. Every American's lost faith in these institutions because they've seen how these institutions have been weaponized against the American people. And so it doesn't give me reassurance that there's an investigation. That investigation is going to be, you know, it's right. going to come out absolutely muted and nothing will happen and there's no accountability. She should be fired. She should resign in absolute disgrace and they should really take a look at the protocols. And it pains me to say that because the men and women on that stage, one of them who was on my detail for a long period of time, the female that was on the stage, who's one of the greatest human beings you'll ever meet, they did their job perfectly and they would have right. died for the former president. And had it not been for the CS guys, the counter snipers, they probably would have been dead.
So you are not against women into the Secret Service?
I can tell you that female on the stage can outshoot all those guys.
Right.
Because
and what about the courage?
I've seen her do it. And she jumped on him, and she would have eaten a bullet for him in a heartbeat. And in fact, if I were them, I would be infuriated that somebody – and remember, they move with the president.
Right.
So, you know, they got to the site with the president 10 minutes before. They're not covering roofs. That's not their duty. They're body people, you know, and then you have people who are dealing with the perimeter. Something happened on the perimeter, and we almost had a former president, my father, lose his life over it. And now they're talking about whether or not, you know, there's too many bandages on his ear. I mean, this is literally
so
the discourse of the
media. Did you know that was out there? Did people tell you that they were talking about that?
I hadn't heard that, but when I saw blood rushing down the side of his face, right. you know, and I'm trying to shield my children's eyes from it, I right. I can't believe that 72 hours later this is the dialogue by, you know, MSNBC or whoever the hell
so
it is.
So I've seen him. I remember I was at the Apprentice final, one of the last ones, when Geraldo was in.
Yeah.
So when they were in the breaks, I went to the actual event. Everyone went to the pre-fund where the party was. I went to the event where you just sit in the audience, and I'm just watching. And in the breaks, do you remember what happened? You didn't have kids yet, but all Don's kids, all his grandkids yeah. would be running up. Yeah. Baron, running
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
In the breaks, he was a grandfather.
Yeah.
Then they quickly scatter around. Every break, the family's running out. I go, I so that's – but I think your father is reluctant to – maybe he wants the kids to be anonymous, but he's reluctant to show the grandfather.
Yeah.
He's reluctant to show the father. And do you think that that might change? Because people need to see that.
You know, he came to my daughter's school. She's 4 years old. He came to, you know, Grandfather Day, you know, Grandparents Day at my daughter's school, and she didn't know he was coming. And sure enough, he walks in. Obviously, the school knows because of Secret Service. And,
in Florida.
You know, shows up, and she sees him and just breaks down to tears, runs up, gives him a hug. And there's this the cutest little picture where he's holding her little hand, and the hand's so, you know, she's 35 pounds, right?
Does she know that he's the president?
Yeah, absolutely.
She knows.
And she loves him. And he walks into her classroom with her holding this, you know, his big hand and her small little hand and, you know, them walking side to side. And, you know, I posted the little video of it and it took down. I mean, he is so good with his grandkids. He's so good. He was so great with us as kids. Right. Brian, if he wasn't a great father, you think I'd be going through the hell that I've gone through in 8 years. I'm the most subpoenaed person in the history of the country. I've taken more arrows. Other than him, I've probably taken more arrows than anybody in the history of politics. And they've come after me in ways that people don't even understand, 99% of which aren't even published, right? They've tried to destroy our lives. They've tried to bankrupt us. They've tried to take us down. They've tried to destroy our company.
But it seems to me it brought you closer.
No question.
It sealed you off.
And if he wasn't a phenomenal human being, a phenomenal father, a phenomenal guy, a phenomenal friend, believe me, I wouldn't be fighting this fight.
All right. Hopefully we do this a lot. We got another 3 or 4 months and nobody better to talk to. Congratulations, Eric. So far, so good. You authoring your part of the biggest comeback story in the history of politics. Back in a moment. Eric Trump.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It was very nice of Eric Trump to join me. Mark Lauder joined me and Alexi Lalas. What an hour we have here right across from the convention center at Milwaukee site of the 2024 RNC, where Donald Trump's party has had a great 2 days, and it should be really dynamic tonight because speaking will be Don Jr. Speaking will be, for the first time, Vice President nominee, the J.D. Vance. So those are just some. Mike Waltz will also be speaking. If you want to see me on stage, by the way, just quick note. The last time this summer, I believe, July 27th, coming up next Saturday, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour at the Sherman Theater. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com. And VIP opportunities, this way I get a chance to talk to you before the show. It's like no other. It'll overperform what all your expectations are. It's a great patriotic night. Informational and emotional. Don't move.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments from the Brian Kilmeade Show as I come to you just right across the street from the convention center. This is one of the few, one of the many Fox headquarters. I think we have 3 booths in the center. Fox Business is down right on the floor. That's a great location. We're a little controversial. I hate to say this to my next guest, Mary Catherine Hamm, but I did steal a water. I thought it was for everybody. It was from ABC.
Oh,
right.
Dear.
And I just walked by and I just took it.
And now you just admitted it.
Right. And I felt bad, but people must be like, not only did he take our water, he must do this a lot. Because I was so confident when I took it, I think I sent the wrong message. Like, look at me, I can steal anything.
No, I don't think so. I think that is the right message. Because when you've made a mistake like that, if you just act like you've been there,
oh, really?
Everyone's like, I guess he's allowed to do that.
Right. And you're from someone speaking, because in the past you've stolen things.
Of course. Like,
right.
I have a really good resume in this
area.
Right. Yes.
Because so at the top of Mary Catherine Hamm's resume is smash and grab queen.
Yes.
Smash and grab queen.
That's correct. That's why I can cover crime so effectively.
Yeah, that's good. I don't really know your cover crime, but I know what you mean. Alina Hobb is going to be coming in shortly, and Karl Rove at the bottom of the hour. Have you heard of either one of them?
I have indeed.
Yes.
Yes,
yes. Well, I'm so glad, by the way, I'm so glad you're on Fox. You've been on before, but never face-to-face on radio.
I know. I'm excited to be here.
So what is it like for you? Because CNN is just across the way. And then we're here.
Right.
I mean, do you ever say to yourself, I wish I was there?
No, but everybody's, I'm having a lot of fun.
Okay. Look at you trying to be diplomatic.
No, we're all in the same hotel, right? So I'm running into everybody.
Right.
But I'm a bridge builder, Brian. That's
really?
What I am. Yeah.
Because I've elected so far not to talk to people I don't know, but just recognize. You know what I mean? I'm just saying to myself, this could easily go bad.
No, that's fair. And everybody's busy anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. So I thought it was a really good night last night. I thought the emotion was great. I thought the speeches were strong. I thought the sleeper was Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I thought it was really personal. Before I play some cuts and give people an idea what they may have missed, Nikki Haley's tone, she wasn't pretending as if they weren't going to war.
Right.
For those of you who don't agree with everything he says, there's a place for you. And I thought DeSantis was on the money. I felt like he was totally in the copy. What did you think?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the tone of Haley's speech. It was specifically tailored to a very specific kind of voter who doesn't want to see her falling all over herself. They want to see her a little bit grudgingly saying, hey, in the balance, the U.S. needs this.
Right.
But, like, it would feel inauthentic if she was going full face in the tank, right?
Yeah.
So I think that was an effective tone. And I love a Southern lady lilt up there. I like the way she talks because I'm from North Carolina.
Right.
so I enjoyed that. I thought DeSantis was great. He had the Weekend at Bernie's line was fantastic. Trump left. Everybody left. We enjoyed it very much. And then I thought, like, the regular Americans who spoke.
Yes.
Were very impressive. That is a hard room to speak in. It's very big. I would be nervous, and I speak all the time. And I thought they were so effective. Their stories were heartbreaking. And to watch them amid the big political stars was a really nice programming note. I liked how they did that.
All right, so I want you to take in Nikki Haley. She came out and said, I want everyone to know first off, I'm voting for Donald Trump. I endorse Donald Trump, and everybody that votes for me vote for Donald Trump. She did all that. Cut two.
We should acknowledge that there are some Americans who don't agree with Donald Trump 100% of the time. I happen to know some of them, and I want to speak to them tonight. My message to them is simple. You don't have to agree with Trump 100% of the time to vote for him. Take it from me. I haven't always agreed with President Trump, but we agree more often than we disagree.
And, you know, a week ago, she wasn't going. She wasn't invited. And that's a pretty good slot she had last night. What do you think of the tone?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And it's an important message. I would say that many of the speakers we've seen chart a path for voters from somewhere where they disagree with Donald Trump to a vote for Donald Trump. And that is an important thing to model for people. She's doing it. Ron DeSantis is doing it. Even J.D. Vance is doing it, right? Because he gets asked a question every time he sits down about the fact that he opposed Trump 8 to 10 years ago, and he can say the facts on the ground have changed. I have seen him be an effective president. That is how I got to where I am today. And other voters who are on the fence need to see people having made that journey, and that's what they're seeing.
And right, so many people too. Look at Ted Cruz. Yeah. Ted Cruz, for 8 years ago, was on the stage not endorsing Donald Trump. Vote your heart.
Right. Well, other folks too, like Amber Rose is an example, right? She's not somebody who would the traditional Republican. She told her story. I thought it was very nice speech. Amber Rose, we've got the Democratic African-American mom last night who spoke, who's a, you know, she's a Democrat. And she says, well, this is how I got here. This is what changed in my life that brought me to this moment.
My son was murdered, was stabbed to death after surviving Afghanistan at 35 years old. And because Alvin Bragg let this guy out afterwards.
It's so bad.
These criminals, these megalomaniacs get out of prison and they kill again. And it's because of the AG. And she said, and Donald Trump wouldn't have done that and reached out, and they've since had a relationship. She had a great slot last night. But, Eric, I don't want to drive you crazy, but yesterday Van Jones said what you said about Amber Rose. Mm-hmm. So I know she's extremely attractive with a neck tattoo and with blonde hair, which I'm not sure was her birth color. And everyone said it's a big deal. She's used influencer. But listen what Van Jones said.
That was probably the most dangerous speak for the Democratic coalition. That is a young woman of color. She's describing the experience a lot of people have, feeling that maybe if you're around too many liberals, you might get criticized too much, or you might not be able to speak your mind. And she spoke to it really well. And she's way more famous than any of us up here. I'm going to tell you that, way more famous. And so to the extent that these guys are trying to bust up our coalition, that was a bunker buster right there.
Yeah, and Van Jones is pretty famous himself, so that's like he's the most famous one on that stage. No, he's right. She, and by the way, that clip went on sports talk radio shows. It went on, you know, urban radio. It went on podcasts. Right. It went on all over social media. She is a figure that gets that kind of distribution, and her story was kind of touching. She's like, my father's a veteran. I had this argument with him. I did my own research, and this is the conclusion I came to. And not only that, but I feel welcome here. And I think that is really powerful.
But also I think something else. I'm no longer waiting for someone else to define who he is. Right. I did my own research. Van Jones says, I watched to see what he did, what he was doing as president, and I no longer was willing to let somebody else tell me what they thought of him, and obviously it was negative. And most, I think something like 85% of all the coverage on President Trump has been negative. So I thought this was, you could relate to this cut. Cut 10, Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about Donald Trump, the president, and the person.
When the president hired me, I was the first mom and only the third woman to ever serve as the White House press secretary. And in that role, I endured relentless attacks from the left. I was insulted as a guest at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And when an MSNBC host, the author of several books on empowering women, said I was unfit to be a mother, and another MSNBC host said I was vile, but our president pulled me aside, looked me in the eye, and said, Sarah, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're tough, and they attack you because you're good at your job. Never let them stop fighting.
What do you think when you heard that?
Yeah, I didn't expect her to be quite so personal because she is tough. And the thing that we remember about Sarah Huckabee Sanders is seeing her be tough. But I liked that she was giving this behind the curtain look. And what's interesting to me, Laura Trump did it as well. And she said, you know, I invite you to see something new in Donald Trump that maybe you hadn't seen before. And frankly, I think I saw something new in him on Saturday that I didn't know was there. His behavior was brave. It was admirable. He reassured everyone. His behavior since then has done the same thing. And so I think inviting people to see a different kind of Donald Trump is an important message. And Donald Trump, importantly, is facilitating that. He is looking like that other side of him that they talk about.
But, you know, we had Eric on, and Eric was saying, you know, he's a great-grandfather, and we've seen it. I've seen it before he was running for president. You'd see him with his kids, you'd see him with the grandkids. But I don't think it's any other candidate, Mary, would be having the kids around him all the time.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, they know I'm a good father. They know I'm a grandfather. And I think that might be different today because Don Jr.'s daughter will introduce him. She called him up yesterday and said, I want to do something.
Very nice.
So she's 17.
Okay.
So sooner or later, you're going to get that personal side whether he wants it or not. Maybe is he afraid that he might look too soft?
I wonder if that might be part of it. But honestly, this week has been very humanizing of Donald Trump, and that is effective for him.
All right, so we got your podcast, Getting Hammered, best name ever.
Thank you.
All right, and then what else are you going to be doing today? Do you even know?
What am I doing today? I'm doing Gutfeld tomorrow, and I will be on Fox Nation, I believe, tonight, or the Fox broadcast.
With Pete Hegseth.
That or Fox broadcast with Juan Williams, I think,
right,
at some point tonight.
Both sexy men.
Yes.
Right? Am I correct?
It's true. It's so true.
Thank you. When we come back, Alina Haba and then Karl Rove also have positive qualities.
Yes.
Thank you, Mary Catherine Hamm.
Talk to you soon.
More of the Brian Kilmeade Show, live from the Republican National Convention, next. From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It's one of the greatest comebacks in American history. It was unpredictable. I mean, I thought it could happen, but it was unpredictable. And it's a tribute to Trump more than any other thing. No matter what they threw at him, whether it was from his ex-friends, the Never Trumpers, or the legal system, or Joe Biden, he just kept coming.
I know there's a lot of time left, no question. I don't think any election's over, or I don't think even Joe Biden's done. However, anybody who looks at the battleground states, anyone's been looking at the polls, anyone's been seeing this convention, anyone's seeing what happened on Saturday, the horrific event that showed the president in the line of fire literally get up, stand up, put his fist in the air and said, I'm still going to be fighting and then come back better than ever today. Anyone who's seen the vice president's election, the process and the way it was pulled off, anyone seen the speakers, the real world people, as well as the senators and the more recognizable names, knows they're in a real good spot. Here's John King of CNN. Even he had to call it as he sees it. Cut 16.
The state of the race is on night two of the Republican convention. Donald Trump is leading in this race. Significantly, if you look deep into the polling, he has a chance to build on it. New numbers out today. More bad news for the president. Well, this is how our CNN political unit, led by David Chalian, projects the race right now. And right now, deep red, solid Republican. Light red, lean Republican. If this map played out, the election were today and the map played out like this, even if the toss-ups went blue, Donald Trump would win the election.
And part of that is, if you go to the X's and O's of it, New Hampshire, Minnesota, Virginia, and if you listen to Lee Zeldin and the former president, he believes New York is even in play. So they're making them play everywhere. They wanted to make the Republicans play in Florida and spend in North Carolina, and maybe they should. North Carolina, maybe. I don't think in Florida. But in the big picture, I think that you'd much rather be him than somebody else. Alina Haba now joins us from right across the way. Alina, great to see you.
Hi, good to see you.
So what was the mood last night? How did you feel as though day two was?
I think it was amazing. I mean, there were some great speakers, obviously, some moving ones.
Yeah.
I thought it was, frankly, very sad and tragic when you listen to some of the stories of the people that were murdered ruthlessly and their history because of our open borders. So I think it was an important night. I love that each night has a theme. This is my first RNC, so I'm learning as I go. But to keep my attention for that long is very difficult, and it was really an amazing experience.
You spent all your time in the legal world. How did you get into the Trump world?
Well, actually, I was a member at Trump Bedminster, the club where the president and his wife and family summer. So I had met him through that, and I had other clients that obviously are members and recommended me. And then I went through an interview process with him and the Trump Organization, much like anybody would. Yeah.
And then the cases just started flowing in.
I started winning. The media, left-wing media hates to say it. I won. My first case he gave me was a case called Summer Zervos' case. It was an apprentice individual that had sued the president. The case had been going on for years. He had a very large firm in New York had represented him. And then I got the case. I countersued under a new law called anti-SLAPP, and the case was dropped by her and her team within, I think it was 2 months of me taking the case. So then that became, here, Alina, now handle this, now handle that. And then we beat Michael Cohen, and we beat, you know, Savage, an individual that also sued the president. And, you know, and then we kept going, and I was part of the AG case and a bunch of others.
Just looking at this case right now, we find out about the immunity case. I don't have a law background. So people are reexamining everything to do with the case and the conviction. What is the next step in trying to overturn that conviction? And are they analyzing the immunity decision in order to see if some of these things he's been convicted of were considered immune because he did it as president?
100%. So immunity is an incredibly important decision. The Supreme Court did not create a new law. They upheld the law that was created under Nixon v. Fitzgerald. So it goes back to Nixon. That's how long ago. And I want to make that clear. This is not Trump won. This was America won, and we just preserved the law that existed. The executive branch is an incredible thing. It's one man that has to run the country and cannot do so with fear of being criminally and civilly sued. What has happened now is they've confirmed that official acts are immune under from the executive branch and the executive office are that all the cases where they included witnesses from the Oval, you know, anybody from Hope Hicks to, you know, we saw that in the Hush Money trial to the secretary that sat outside, Madeline, like those, that so evidence can now not be considered as far as we're concerned.
But have you actually formally said reconsider this? So it's been filed in New York?
It was filed in New York. Yeah.
And what did they tell you? When are they getting back to you?
We're going to, you know, they have a chance to respond to our papers. It will be heard probably in August, and that's why they pushed back the sentencing date until late September.
I want you to hear what Joe Biden wants to do with the Supreme Court.
I'm not surprised. It comes from the immunity decision the Supreme Court ruled on, and Clarence Thomas, in his dissent, said that independent prosecutors appointed by the Attorney General aren't legit. That's the basis on which this judge moved to dismiss.
That was his describing, not surprised by the documents case after the immunity decision came down. But he wants to, in the Supreme Court, put age limits on it. He wants to have, you know, you turn 70, you're done, you're finished. You think that's going to work?
I think it's ironic coming from him,
who's 81.
Cognitive test. No, I don't think it's going to work. I think that that clears out the people that he doesn't want on the Supreme Court. We have a system. They need to stop bending the rules. I think that cognitive tests are incredibly important. Right. I don't think age is necessarily critical. I think your ability to be intelligent is. Listen, the truth is what he's talking about is something called the appointments clause. And I'm not sure whether Biden's aware. He probably isn't. But that's not something Clarence Thomas did. That's something the Constitution speaks to. You cannot take a henchman, put him in place, and say, go get Trump. And that's what they tried to do.
So Jack Smith was, they said, you appointed him illegally, unconstitutionally. Yeah. So that's why Aileen kind of got rid of it.
Yeah.
Is it up to the judge in Washington to say, come to her own conclusion?
Does she
have to go after what Aileen Cannon said?
No, it's not binding, but it would be a poor decision not to be in line with that and the Supreme Court.
But you've heard her. You've met her.
Of course. I know well
she's
who she is.
She's a brutal person.
I also don't think it's coincidental that she was selected for President Trump's January 6th case. I mean, it's sham after sham, but if she has any dignity left, she'll follow suit.
Aileen Ahaba, enjoy your first convention. Great catching up to
you.
Hopefully towards the end of the week, we'll be able to do it again.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kilmeade, Karl Rove is next. Don't move. We're coming to you live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'll start by making one thing perfectly clear. Donald Trump has my strong endorsement, period. Our country is at a critical moment. We have a choice to make. For more than a year, I said a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for President Kamala Harris. After seeing the debate, everyone knows it's true.
And she is right about that. Eventually, and if Joe Biden is the nominee, Kamala Harris is going to be the vice presidential candidate. And not anyone, including George Stephanopoulos, thinks he's going to get through another term. But to do that, it looks like he's going to have to stage a comeback to win. Karl Rove does this for a living. You're full-time doing this political thing, right?
No, this is what you do.
It's not a hobby, is it?
No. I make my living by being your Fox colleague and writing for the Wall Street Journal, giving speeches. My politics I do as a volunteer.
Oh, I understand.
The great American tradition.
So what about Nikki Haley last night? I thought she nailed it, but you're the pro.
Well, am I going to come on your program and disagree with you? No.
Yes, you would. Are you kidding? You always do.
Look, I think she did a great job. I thought it was a brilliant speech because she was going in front of an audience of people who had, in a number of instances, been elected as delegates in a contested contest where she was on the other side, and she made it impossible for them not to applaud her.
She got to it right away, right?
And then from then on, she would say things that would cause everybody to applaud. And I thought it was a brilliantly executed speech.
Allison thought, in a moment of candor, that I'm responsible in some way that she got invited because I asked President Trump last week. I said to him, "Is it true Nikki Haley is not invited?" He goes, "I'm just hearing that," and he said she stayed in too long. And next thing you know, she's invited. Is Allison wrong in saying I deserve credit?
No, you deserve credit. whether it's true or not, I'm sitting on your program, so of course I'm going to say you deserve credit. Look, this is an interesting thing, though.
Right.
You probably had a role, because what's happening is he hears from people outside the inner circle, and as he said to you, I haven't heard that. So he's a guy. I mean, and look, it's instinctive. If she got invited after that, it's a good instinct. Why haven't we invited the principal opponent?
And it's easy to understand how something like that could not go across his desk.
Yeah.
But it was his idea to bring a lot of these personal stories intermingled with the bigger names.
I got to tell you, last night, great. Okay, so you got one big meta issue. Ted Cruz, former critic, Nikki Haley, competitor, Ron DeSantis, competitor, all of them come out and give great speeches. But I thought the highlight of the evening, at least for the people inside there, were those three emotional, ordinary Americans. Ann Fudner talking about the fentanyl death of her son. Michael Moran talking about the rape and murder of his sister by an illegal. And then they closed it off with Madeline Brame, the mother of a vet who was stabbed by an illegal in New York City, and who had pointed comments to make about the decline in public safety under the new Manhattan prosecutor. I thought all three of those were surprisingly effective, deeply emotional, and clearly from the heart. And they touched a lot of people. You looked around that room last night, that giant room, and when Ann Fudner was talking, there were lots of wet eyes.
Now, I'll bring it to Michael Morin. And Michael Morin is the brother of Rachel Morin, who was jogging. And it's 6 o'clock at night in a path that I talked to his half-sister today. So they go down all the time. So he was wearing AirPods. We were just trying to figure out. And this guy who came into this country illegally, who has been accused of murder in his own country, waited for anybody, sees her, and kills her the most brutal way possible, rapes her first. Here's Michael Morin.
My sister's death was preventable. The monster arrested for killing Rachel entered the U.S. unlawfully after killing a woman in El Salvador. Joe Biden and his designated border czar, Kamala Harris, opened our borders to him and others like him, empowering them to victimize the innocent. Yet, to this day, we have not heard from Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. They never apologized.
And Donald Trump called the family. He spoke for 45 minutes to the mom. So that was one of the moments that stood out. And at the end, he said, I hope he finds redemption, finds Jesus at the end. And he could not. He was supposed to be on our show, Fox and Friends, this morning. He said after that speech, he just needed to have time to himself.
God bless him. And I was, like you, I was struck by that note. I hope that the man who murdered my sister finds Jesus.
I would not be able to say that.
No.
I would not be able to say that. I wouldn't even be thinking that. So overall, I watched Britt Hume, too, last night. And, you know, he's not quick to compliment Donald Trump. I think he's very fair with him, like you are. But he said, so far, this has been two good days. They like to, outside our network, make fun of the themes. But both themes have been effective. So you had safety last night. And tonight, tonight's theme is Make America Strong once again, highlighting President Biden's foreign policy failures and Trump's VP pick. So we're going to get to see Donald Trump Jr., Governor Greg Abbott, who's got an interesting future, Vice Presidential nominee J.D. Vance, people like Michael Waltz will have a chance to speak. So it'll be a good night. What are you looking for example, from Vance?
Well, first of all, this is a night where there might be a little tension because Vance is sort of a neo-isolationist who's against Ukrainian aid, and yet some of the people speaking tonight are strong advocates of Ukrainian aid. So this is where the party has a little bit of, it's got to aim towards cohesion. The guy who makes these decisions will be the President of the United States.
By the way, I am firmly for Ukrainian aid, and not in a slow-walking way, but in a way in which they can be successful. Yeah.
Right.
How about we're still waiting for F-16 pilots? We have F-16 trained. Now we're getting them, but we're getting them from Denmark or some other countries.
Netherlands.
Now we're going to get Patriot batteries, going to get six. When we had 100 scattered throughout Eastern Europe, now we're going to get them six. First, he said no.
Yeah.
Right. First, he said no HIMARS. Yeah. Then he said attack them, but you can't hit where you want to hit.
Yeah, right.
He's got to hit a certain area.
Yeah.
So when people, this
we're
going to
limit. We're going to limit the range of them so that you can't hit.
Doesn't it make it hard to have this position when you have them executing this type of aid?
Slow motion.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Look. Absolutely. And it gives aid and encouragement to the people who are. I was talking the other night with someone who said, we were responsible for this. Think about it. If we had tried to put missiles in Mexico, we'd be upset about it. The United States and NATO did not attempt to put missiles in Ukraine. This was done for one simple reason, that Putin wants to reestablish not just the Soviet empire, but the Russian empire of imperialist Russia in the 1700s and the 1800s. And he wants to be the guy who has restored the greatness of Russia on the international stage by subjugating his neighbors.
So, you know, so Vance, we don't doubt his intelligence. Right. I have no problem with his age. He's got a year and a half in there. He's got a very unique story.
Yeah.
He really brings
a great book. He's a wonderful writer.
And he's got addiction in his background, yeah. Not personal, but
and
his
think
family.
Of, think about that. I mean, think about being raised in a broken family and you're
dirt poor.
I mean, I didn't have exactly the most, you know, well-funded up childhood. So I know what I know, but we didn't have to fight with the issues of addiction. My mother suffered from some challenges, mental challenges. But to have to fight, you know, addiction in your family with your mother and your grandmother is something really tough.
No, I hear you. So he's got that story. I said to him, he was on our couch 3 weeks ago in New York City, 1211 6th Avenue, our studios. And I said, what makes me nervous is your foreign policy. He says, we got to worry about China. I go, you got to worry about everything.
Yeah.
I go, we could do it. I go, we just got to double our defense budget and find a way to make our military industrial complex a profit engine.
Yeah.
And give our friends and families discount to our allies.
Yeah.
So then we become their mechanics, their advisors, their trainers.
Right.
They will pay.
Right.
And
right.
When the ones that can't, we'll yeah. understand. We'll put yeah. them on a program.
Yeah.
This doesn't have to be. It's not a Salvation Army.
Yeah. Think about this. Mark Thiessen makes this point. Our Ukrainian aid is basically a U.S. weapons modernization program for our military. We're taking 20-year-old TOW missiles out of our arsenals and replacing them with brand new weapons. We're giving those to the Ukrainians to fight the Russians, and we're taking and making new missiles with additional capabilities and greater lethality and putting them in our stockpiles. And by doing that, also, you know, taking factories around America and opening them back up and putting people back on the production line and beefing up our military muscle like we did with the Lend-Lease program before World War II. I mean, if we had not begun the process of expanding our military manufacturing capabilities mm-hmm. in 1939 and 1940, when the Japs hit Pearl Harbor on December 7th, we might not have been able to do what we did in response.
And just to go further back, I'm not a World War I expert, but we had almost no army. We had no military infrastructure. We were reluctant to get involved. When the Lusitania gets struck and we get in, we were unwilling. We were unready. We were not ready. But
we
ramp up quick.
Yeah. We don't have that luxury in the world in which we live today.
I want to do a clean segment just on what's left of Joe Biden's career.
Right.
But I do want you to hear Cory Booker on Senator Menendez getting convicted. And now he's finally saying step aside. Listen, cut 17.
The folks I'm watching tonight from Nikki Haley.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To this is not what we need in America. We don't need someone that deals in demeaning and degrading people within their own party. And we definitely don't need a felon who's been convicted in federal court and someone who has paid out millions and millions of dollars in civil crimes, has shown in every area of his life, from his business life to his charitable efforts to even the criminal counts now against him, that he is somebody that is thoroughly corrupt in a way that has been proven in court after court after court.
Well, I think he was talking about Trump. I pulled the wrong sock, but he wants Bob Menendez to resign. So does Schumer.
Finally.
How could he not resign? He's going to be sentenced since October. He's going to prison. He got caught, and everyone understands what he did, but yet he keeps his security clearance up until now. He serves on foreign relations. Of course he's got to be told to
get
out.
He's a former chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. And he was the chairman when he got indicted the first time. I mean, it's a sorry moment. And Cory Booker, look, nice guy, really fine person, I hear. But, you know, he could not bring himself to say anything adverse about his home state colleague until now.
Right.
And we all knew it. I mean,
look at Fetterman. Fetterman came out right now and said, get this guy out of here.
Yeah. Staying on the Senate.
When we come back, what Joe Biden has left and the insurgency that went under the wire but hasn't stopped, and believe it or not, one of the architects of the Get Rid of Joe movement is Nancy Pelosi. Don't move.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
If there has some medical condition that emerged, if the doctors came to me and said, you got this problem, that problem. But I made a serious mistake in the whole debate. And look, when I originally ran, you may remember it, I said I was going to be a transitional candidate. And I thought that I'd be able to move from this, just pass it on to someone else. But I didn't anticipate things getting so divided.
That is President Biden saying, what would it take in yesterday's interview on BET? What would it take for him to step aside? He said, well, if I got a medical condition. No longer, he said, if it shows the polls show I can't win. Because then David Axelrod came back and said, will you show him the polls? Because no one showed him the right polls. It doesn't look like he can win. I just got this. Fox Business has obtained the DNC letter, first reported by CBS, on the exact date for the virtual roll call. And there'll be no virtual voting will occur before August 1st. We do not have to attribute that to CBS anymore. The letter's attached. So the full text can be used for reporting. And the reporting says, we'll focus on how the convention will operate. We'll be discussing proposed final convention rules. As rules committee co-chairs, they have confirmed with the Democratic National Committee and the National Convention that no virtual voting will begin before August 1st. So they wanted this to start right away and get him confirmed before the actual convention, which I don't think anybody wants to go to in Chicago. Carl Rove is my guest. Carl. Joe Biden's defiant. He's doing another, did three interviews in 3 days, just did Lester Holt, just did BET. This guy's going to stay.
Well, he wants to stay. I'm not certain it's entirely within his grasp to make that decision with finality. I think there are a growing number of people. Look, the effort to get him out sort of took a back seat during the Republican convention, particularly after the event of Saturday night. But I bet you as soon as the Republicans get out of Milwaukee, the pressure is going to ramp up inside the Democratic Party. Think about how bad it is. Look at the last – on Sunday morning, Fox News issued a poll, and nobody paid attention to it because of the events of Saturday night. But they ask – at the end of the poll, they ask three questions. They say the first question is that do you think – that his, that the president, President Biden's mental state, mental and physical state, represents a danger to U.S. national security interests, a risk to U.S. national security. And 63% said yes.
Right.
62% among independents and 38% of Democrats. The second question was basically, do you... do you think that he is
mentally fit?
No. Do you think he's making the decisions?
Oh.
And only it was 63% said only somewhat or not at all. So you got nearly two-thirds of Americans saying he ain't making the decisions. Other people are. And then they said, the final question was, do you think the White House has been honest and transparent about his condition? And it's 71% say no.
Right.
So the first two say, we the American people, by a margin of 2-1, think he is not up to the job, including 38% of Democrats say it's a risk to the U.S. national security. And then 71%, 7 out of every 10 Americans say, we can't trust what those people tell
us. Bad, 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 but he doesn't care about that. So he has 3,900 delegates. What can he, how can you, if you're a Democrat, like Adam Schiff said, we can't win with him there.
Yeah.
Well, how do you get him out?
You have to have a growing chorus of people who go to him and say, do you really want history to judge you as the one Democrat who could lose to Donald Trump and who cost us seats in the House and Senate? You labored hard for our party for years, and you're in a place where you cannot win, and you will tear us, bring us down. The only way for you, for us to have a shot is for you to put the party and the country above your own personal interests.
His wife's going to say, you're the best person.
Yeah.
You were the best person, then you're the best person.
You know what?
Now.
That's why they've got to say, it will be on you, and it will be on Jill, and it will be on Valerie, your sister, and it will be on Hunter, your son, and the history will judge you and judge you harshly if you keep us from having a shot.
If you're Trump, do you want him to stay in?
Sure. He's the known quantity. And the danger for the Republicans is, I call it the Nikki Haley effect. Go back to December and January, December of last year and January, when it looked like she might have a shot, and so the national polls began to put her in the head-to-head matchups. So the head-to-head matchup between Donald Trump and Joe Biden was like one or two points up for Trump or one or two points down for Trump, but Nikki Haley versus Biden was 8 points up, 9 points up, 16 points up, 13 points up. And we didn't know much about her. But the country was so desperate for an alternative to the two guys we had. I mean, we got to the two most unpopular candidates.
Prediction is he'll be out and Harris will be in?
No, it won't be Harris. If it happens, it will not be Harris because she's not a good candidate and they know it.
Thanks so much, Karl Rove. You are a great guest. I know.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. I come to you not from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, but from Milwaukee. I don't really know the street address. Right across from the convention center where tonight is Keep America, Get America Strong Again night at the convention center. Last night was great. I'll bring some highlights back. Amongst my guests, Britt Hume. No one's seen more of these conventions. And I'll tell you, last night I watched because I was on Gutfeld. And I watched his remarks right after they closed and says people were making fun of the themes of each night. They shouldn't be making fun now because this has been extremely well run. The emotion was strong. The speeches were great. The fact that you had Governor Nikki Haley there, they were obviously a big critic of the former president as they went head to head. And Governor DeSantis, who bowed out after Iowa but thought he could take out Trump and he couldn't, obviously. They made amends. And then you have Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and then you have real everyday American people. Now, tonight, among the highlights will be Donald Trump Jr. will, I believe, introduce Vice Presidential nominee J.D. Vance. Donald Trump Jr. also said that his daughter asked to speak, and she's 17, and he said to us, I said, I'm going to let her. And I said, how? He goes, I'll just let her speak before me. I'll let her introduce me, but it'll say something first. So you're probably hearing that for the first time because he told me that in the break. Governor Greg Abbott, I think he is a star on the Republican side. Think about this. Governor Abbott was the one who said the border's been overrun. It should not be a Texas problem. It should not be an Arizona problem. It should not be a New Mexico or California problem. It should be a 50-state issue. So we started busing them to different places. And then Governor DeSantis dropped illegal immigrants off in Narragansett. And we were off and running. And now Chicago, Philadelphia, Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and most of all New York are overrun with illegals, and they're all sanctuary cities. Don't go to New Hampshire, although they have a northern border problem. Governor Chris Sununu joins us now. Governor, welcome back.
Hey, we had a northern border problem. We nipped that one pretty hard. We put millions of dollars into a northern border law enforcement alliance here in New Hampshire that where we work seamlessly now with Border Patrol and ICE. So we didn't get any help from the feds, of course, so we did it ourselves. And I wish every state would do it, frankly. But no, the northern border as a whole is a problem. There's no question about it, especially with potential terrorists. And I think you and I have talked about more people crossing the northern border on the terrorist watch list than the southern border. And that should be really concerning, specifically what they call the Buffalo sector, and because they're coming down out of Montreal through Buffalo and into New York. And it's a real problem. But don't worry about it, Brian. Kamala Harris is on the case. She's the border czar. She's got this taken care of. I don't know why you're worried, right?
So, Governor, you would love the Washington Post fact check because they were very critical of our immigration system and the broken border, and they blamed Kamala Harris. And they said, well, correction, she's the border. Her job at the border is to go to the root causes. And Guatemala and Ecuador and Nicaragua, well, the numbers went down. It's not her fault that Venezuela, Cuba, and the rest of the world went up. Do you believe she should be exonerated, judging by that analysis?
There's one root cause. All those executive orders that Joe Biden signed in the first 100 days, the root cause is sitting right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. There's a reason why these numbers skyrocketed on January 21st. They were literally wearing Biden T-shirts as they piled through the border, and the Border Patrol stood there and were, frustrated, and the patrol said, we've been told we can do nothing, so we have to stand here because of policy, not because of the law, not because of the real controls in the system, but a policy signed by Kamala Harris and her administration. So, hey, they can try to exonerate her. The good news is this. Americans are smart. our American people are smart. They see what they see. They're not going to be gaslighted into being told that the millions of people that have come into this country, you know, it's like that final scene in Animal House. Nothing to see here. All is well, right? No, it's right. Chaos going on behind you. We can all see it, and that's exactly why you see it's one of the many things that led to Republican unity, galvanizing behind Trump, complete Democratic disarray, not willing to talk about issues. And it's not over yet by any means. We got to close the deal. But Republicans are in a steamroller, not just on the presidential race, but up and down the ballot, state races and congressional races. That's why it's so exciting and they're panicking so hard.
And you can't blame money as an issue. Well, the Democrats will always raise more. Not anymore. That is not the story. It looks like Joe Biden's funds are frozen and the billions are pouring in. Millions are pouring in for former President Trump, including Elon Musk. Is it Steve Schwarzman? He has now turned over some of the bigger names, and they said their money's coming in. They don't want to talk about it, and I don't blame them, because a lot of it's coming small donors after the assassination attempt that cost the life of a great firefighter and a great man by all accounts on Saturday night. I have not talked to you about this. Your thoughts, because you know your dad was chief of staff for Bush 41. You knew Reagan. Your families knew each other. That's the last time we had a shooting of a president. Your thoughts about how this all went down and the investigation that's happened since.
Yeah, well, a couple things. Number one, you know, there are two other – we lost that firefighter, and you know, there's been great press on him and his amazing family, what an amazing individual he was. And one thing I've tried to do is let's just keep – his name is Corey. Let's keep talking about him, because he just went to a rally, you know, with his family, and he didn't get to come home, and that's tragic. Two other individuals critically shot. They're a veteran Marine named Dutch and another individual. They're both in tough shape, and so that's – let's not forget about them. And I think everything else goes to not just what happened and where the failures were, but over the past 48 hours, as you've been talking about, the head of the Secret Service has been giving out a lot of clear misinformation. Their communications and their publicity PR stuff lately has been awful, right, having to retract statements. Oh, no, that building was supposed to be handled by law enforcement, and then they retracted that and said, oh, no, we had complete control of everything. Oh, they couldn't stand on a sloped roof. Obviously, that's not true. That's one of the dumbest excuses I've ever seen in the world. So the fact they're already talking and there's already a lot of misinformation is building a lot of skepticism. The good news is I think Congress is going to get involved. A lot of folks will get involved. The best thing Joe Biden could do for America right now is to go to the head of that department and say, you're gone, right? We're going to get somebody else in here and an independent review, and we're going to figure out what the heck happened, because clearly there were failures. And it's not just a failure of that day. It could be long-term systematic failures with training, with hiring, with, you know, internal protocols. So there's a lot to be answered for there, and I don't care what party you're from, you need answers, and you want to know going forward that that someone of the president's security detail and you know, the emphasis they put on it, that those security measures can work. You're never going to get 100%. I get it. But there were clear failures here. And that is going to, I think, plague Biden as well as we go down this. Again, no one has any sense that he's in control. He's not making any management decisions. He's not looking at metrics and accountability within his department. Nobody actually believes that.
He didn't even know the head of his social – he didn't even know the Secret Service was a woman.
No idea.
He called
her – he has no idea. Somebody should ask him to name his cabinet. How about that? Let's start there. Could you just name your cabinet, the people that literally supposedly sit at the table with you every other week? There's no way he could do it. There's no way. I don't believe it.
All right, so I want you to hear what she said that has everyone beside themselves. And then she said a lot, but this one just goes beyond. Here is what Kim Cheadle said about the reason why they didn't have somebody on the roof where the shooter was. Cut 28.
Should that roof have been secure, period?
That building in particular has a sloped roof at its highest point. And so, you know, there's a safety factor that would be considered there, that we wouldn't want to put somebody up on a sloped roof. And so, you know, the decision was made to secure the building from inside.
Sloped.
Yeah, so there's a safety factor there, but not for the president. I mean,
right.
What are you talking about? Your whole job is safety, but it's safety for everybody else, right? You got to, you know, there's risks that are always taken in security, and God bless them. A lot of times they get up and they do it. But to say that we weren't willing to lie down on a slope – by the way, did you see the slope? I mean, you know, come on. What are we talking about
here? It's nothing.
It's ridiculous.
By the way, I have a law enforcement writing me that if there is ever a steep slope, you build it out. You build out. You knew they were doing this for days. You build it out and you deal with it. The other thing is that we have not had answered was the communication between the state police, the local authorities, and the Secret Service. So the local authorities spot somebody. Great. Who are you telling? Nobody can. And I just talked to the higher-ups in the Trump camp. They don't know if there's a capability of communicating in real time on radios between the local law enforcement and the Secret Service. So they can't even communicate. There's a shooter on the roof. But we have people, rally goers looking up while Trump is talking, screaming, he's got a gun. So it's pretty, and yelling at cops, look at him, he's got a gun. So they can't get in to tell the snipers there's a guy who's getting the president, former president, in his crosshairs.
Yeah, it's wild. And then, I mean, again, I don't know if it's true, but I think a lot of us have heard the story that supposedly there's a story that an officer may have climbed up there and seen him and then backed away after seeing that he had a gun. I don't know if that's true.
No, that happened. That's been confirmed.
I mean, that's crazy. That in itself right there, that at that moment in time, there's 100 different ways to notify people of what's actually going on. Hell, take your firearm out and fire it in the air. Scare the hell out of everyone and shut the whole thing will shut down immediately, right? There's 100 different ways you could, once that identification is made, to shut that down almost instantly. But you're absolutely right. It's not that we don't have technology to communicate. Of course we do. Of course we do. There's 100 ways to do it. And they had time to plan this out. Like, they had time to – and it wasn't like there was 100 buildings in the area. You basically had one or two buildings on the perimeter. This was not a hard one. Now, look, I'm a governor. I have my own security. We do – especially in New Hampshire, we're always doing outdoor events. And so there's always risk there and whatnot. But you always take every precaution you can, and communication is the most important part. I just think not owning this and trying to dodge this immediately within days, people said, well, she's trying to save her job. She's putting her career into the grave faster. In crisis moments, you're supposed to be super transparent and super honest about what you know and where it failed. And that's the only solution. That's the only pathway forward. Because it's all going to come out eventually, and I think this is just going to be bad, not just for the Secret Service, but continually to drag down the Biden administration and the proof that they have a complete inability to manage.
All right. Do you believe that Nancy Pelosi will be successful, along with people like Bill Maher and others, in ousting Joe Biden? Because he says he's not going anywhere. Here's what he said yesterday. Cut 20.
Story goes, Truman said, if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. Well, guess what? After the last couple of weeks, I know what he means. But that's why it's so good to have real friends. I'm not being solicitous. I have real friends. So many of you had my back, and I think I've had yours as well. And I will never forget it.
So he does not want to go. Governor, this is all unprecedented. How does this play out?
Yeah, well, look, let's remember Joe Biden did have a dog, and the dog bit everybody. I mean, no one even liked the dog. So let's not forget that. They had to get rid of that dog. And they sent the dog to South Dakota. So, look, the way this is going to play out is – I think over the next 48 hours, this country is going to be really, really clear and show that Republicans are unified, not just for themselves, but for the country. And that's going to be an incredibly positive message. That's going to build a lot more pressure onto the what happens in the next month leading into the Democrat convention. And then you add, again, this investigation into the assassination attempt is going to just, again, put all the problems on Joe Biden once again. And his mismanagement. And so if anyone thought that the assassination attempt or whatever might deflect from the opportunity to remove him, I don't think so at all. That's going to come back in full force in the next 3 weeks. The financial piece that you brought up, Brian, is so important because that's affecting all the other candidates. There's a lot of other senators and congressmen on the Democrat side saying, I need donors here, but they're freezing the money. If they're not into the party, they're not supporting us, and we're all going to get crushed. I think that pressure is going to be very real. 52%. I say 52% chance still that they go with Kamala at the last second. I think so.
Wow, that's interesting because I don't know how they get past her if they did want to make a change. How would you rate this? For the last 2 days, you've been impressed. Nikki Haley, what has she done for her career by going up giving the speech that she gave yesterday? Is it too early to tell?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know what she wants to do with her career. I think Nikki's absolutely great. I thought the speech was right what it needed to be. She said what everybody knows. You don't agree with Trump 100% of the time, or Chris Sununu, or Nikki. No one agrees 100% of the time, but elections are about choices. And that, I think, is the most powerful message to the American people. And in doing so, she's connecting with people, right, that say, I can't do Biden, so I got to go here, or whatever it might be. So just because we don't love any of the candidates doesn't mean you're not going to vote for them. And so for her career, I don't know what it means for her career. I think she can do has a lot of options down the road. I didn't know what that was going to be in the speech, but we were texting back and forth yesterday. Yeah. She came out and said, was endorsing him and supporting him beforehand, but she made it emphatic and unquestionable yesterday, which was good. Couldn't have been easy, right? There's a lot of folks in there that thought she had stayed in the race too long. She didn't. She did the exact right thing, by the way. But a lot of folks that, you know, she had a few jeers there at the beginning, but in the end, she had the exact right message and showed unity, and that's the big thing. Well, I might not love everything the Republicans do, but boy, they're unified. They're clear in their mission, right? The disarray in the Democrat Party is going to turn everyone away. She and Ron, I think, both did a great job solidifying that unity last night.
Yeah, I thought he was. I thought he was really good. I thought Ron DeSantis was really strong. He had a great line too that weekend at Bernie's line. But Governor, what about for you? I know you said that I don't want to run another term. You have to run every 2 years. What's next for you?
Well, I'm thinking like a Sununu kill me ticket in 2032. That's kind of just thinking kind of big there. I don't know if you're interested.
I'd head the ticket?
Well, we could go alphabetical. Yeah, so you can head the ticket. I don't want to do all the work. It's too much work for me. I've been a CEO doing the public sector for 8 years. I need a break. But no, I am going to just kind of enter the private sector, whether it's with business. I'm an economics guy. I firmly believe too many big companies and across this country are getting too involved with politics. And if there's any way I can help them avoid political disarray, maybe there's an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to go out and make a little money and just get back to being a normal dad.
All right. Go do that, Governor Chris Sununu. I appreciate your analysis. So is our audience. Go get him.
Thanks, brother.
In a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show from Milwaukee.
More of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Our enemies do not confine their designs to between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. We need a commander-in-chief who can lead 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. America cannot afford 4 more years of a weekend at Bernie's presidency.
And the former president of the United States looking up clapped at that one, and he killed it. I think that his baseball coach, I did a feature with Governor DeSantis last year, and just to get an idea what kind of athlete he was, trying to make it more of a magazine-ish thing, we talked to his coach, and he texted me last night and said basically hit it out of the park, and I thoroughly agree. He was totally comfortable with the copy. It's almost like he memorized it. So he's very good on his feet anyway, so he memorized that, knocked it out. So that stays in people's minds. National audience, he's going to go he's going to go help the president out where he can, and then people will remember. Either way, he's got another shot in 4 years.
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin, home of the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
There are a lot of questions around that ear, and yet there's been no response to that. Instead, just showing the image of the man coming into the hall with the wounded ear.
A spectacle for this candidate who we know is, by his own admission, obsessed with assorted spectacles. There is a political quest here to mine and use Donald Trump's injury, and whether his allies and Republicans or the candidate himself do that in a way that overextends their credibility will be decided by the voters.
Do you believe that? That is just a list of some of the sound bites that we've gotten from MSNBC, not criticizing Donald Trump's policies or the convention, but saying, did he make too much of the gunshot wound to his ear? Too much padding? Too much bandages? Is it theater? Really? I'm stunned by this. Maybe Britt Hume isn't. He's our political know-it-all who's got more experience than anybody else. Britt, does that astound you that this was going on in other channels?
No, it really doesn't astound me, Brian, because we live in such a divided time, and the resistance to each people in each party to the other party's politicians and leaders is more intense than I've ever seen, and people just cannot think straight. The emergence of Donald Trump on the national scene, however many years ago, 9 years ago, going on now, has created a kind of a crisis. It has been regarded by his supporters as the second coming. It has been regarded by his detractors as a national emergency worthy of the most extraordinary steps. And people adopt on that side of things the most extravagant theories about that allow them to think as ill of Donald Trump as they do. It's quite remarkable.
This is unbelievable. We saw the bullet wound. We actually saw it ricocheting thanks to fantastic photography by the New York Times reporter. And yet they go, well, does he really need that bandage? Yeah. Does he really need that bandage? It's incredible. So, I mean, that's a new low. First off, looking at tonight, Vice President nominee Vance, that's going to be the highlight. But you got Greg Abbott, Donald Trump Jr. is going to be speaking here today. You got Michael Waltz is going to have a good slot tonight. What do you expect to hear from Vance in terms of what do you think it'd be wise for him to include in his speech as a theme?
Well, it's not my place to advise him, but I do think what we'll get from him is as strong a statement as he can make in support of what we might call the new rights view of the world. This is not Ronald Reagan's party. These are not, with few exceptions, not Ronald Reagan's policies. This is not the Republican Party we came to know in the 1980s and 1990s and beyond. This really is the emergence of a new Republican Party based on a kind of populist look at things in which ideas that would have been condemned not too many years ago as products of the American left, tariffs and so on, are the new norm. And I suspect we'll hear a case for that made very well, I imagine. He's a good speaker, by J.D. Vance.
So when you talk about that, foreign policy aside, you're talking about the trade, different approach there. You're talking about the fact that they're not anti-union. You have Sean O'Brien speaking there. And you're talking about the fact that you're not going to hear anything about traditional marriage. You're going to just leave that, including nothing for the first time in, I think, 40 years, no pro-life wording on the platform. And these are the types of things you're referring to?
They are indeed, Brian. Those are good examples you've cited. I still think that within the Republican Party, there are a great many people who are not adherents of this new set of policies. But after 4 years of Joe Biden in office, there's a desire to, above all, to get him out and to get a Republican in, and to get Republicans in House and Senate races around the country. And that's kind of where we are. It's a successful political party. All political parties really are coalitions, and the bigger the coalition, the more successful the party. And so we're going to have a lot of people who are going to be there to vote for Donald Trump, and even indeed work to get him elected, who would dissent from a number of these policies. But broadly speaking, lower taxes, less regulation, issues of that kind, they're for him.
Good move to get Nikki Haley. I know you thought a lot about that. You thought she was a good candidate, but if you're not going to have her in, you might lose her voters. I guess that must have resonated with President Trump. She got the invite and she took it. I thought she had a really good theme. First off, she let everyone know where she stood. Cut one.
I'll start by making one thing perfectly clear. Donald Trump has my strong endorsement, period. Our country is at a critical moment. We have a choice to make. For more than a year, I said a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for President Kamala Harris. After seeing the debate, everyone knows it's true.
So I liked her speech. I thought DeSantis just killed it. I felt very comfortable with the copy. But Nikki Haley's theme was perfect, too. Did you not feel that way?
Well, I've always thought she was a competent politician and a pretty good speaker and a person of real dignity. And I think her speech was just fine. I mean, making clear that there are disagreements or they have differences, but given the choice, it's a no-brainer, which is basically what she was saying to these delegates last night. I was a little concerned, looking at it from her perspective, about how she'd be received. And it sounded like there was some booing when she first got up there. But by the time it was all over, people were cheering. And I suspect it would be considered a plus for the Trump ticket.
And what do you so tonight, so far, I watched your recap. And if I remember correctly, last night, right before I did Gutfeld, I guess you have you ever done Gutfeld?
No, not that I can remember, but my memory is faulty these days.
Okay. So
you thought it was a good cut.
I can't trust Gutfeld. So there you go. So so far you think it's 2 days of the convention. You think it's gone well, right?
Yeah, I think it's been well organized, well planned, and it's planned with some imagination. You know, 4 days is a long time to stretch out a meeting whose main result is already decided or not in doubt. And, and back in the day, the actual nomination occurred at the convention. There were sometimes, if the nominee had already been decided, there would be battles over the platform, votes taken on the floor. All of that is by the boards now. So what we get is a 4-day production designed to present the party and its nominee in the most favorable possible light. And we, as journalists, cover this thing extensively, despite the fact that the original reasons why we did that are gone. Mm. So this is an opportunity for a political party to put on its best face, to make its nominee or nominees look as good as possible to the American public. And I think what they've done so far has largely accomplished that. I don't know what the viewership will be. I'm sure, Brian, that there was great curiosity on the first night in particular to see how Donald Trump seemed. How did he – was he changed to some extent? How badly was he hurt? What did he look like? What was his demeanor going to be? And we got that on the first night. We got a taste of it again last night. It's an interesting thing. Usually these nominees kind of stay out of sight. Except for maybe a cameo appearance early in a convention. He's been there, sitting in the audience both nights.
Yeah, he does everything different. I also love the fact that you had the union speaker, the Teamsters president there. I also love the fact that they have an opportunity to get the Jewish vote in America after Joe Biden's policies were on display. He managed to do the impossible, alienating the American Jewish community as well as the Palestinians. He also has a chance to really make inroads on the Blackfoot. He's made a series of stops in Philadelphia, in New York. He's had success, and he's starting to make some growth there. And what I thought the goal with Nikki Haley was to expand the party. Just because you don't agree with everything he does, it doesn't mean you can't support him. Being a Republican getting Republicans is not enough. I think they're making. It seems to me they're really trying to make an effort there. And lastly, the Hispanic vote. Nobody thinks they haven't increased the Hispanic vote in America gone that way. So there's a chance that they could have not only a victory in November, it's so early, but they could actually have almost a mandate that we haven't had in quite some time. When you look at what Joe Biden's up against, they have done the impossible. They have wounded him to the point where he is so damaged, but he's not dead. So if he survives, he can't win. So I don't know where they go from here.
I don't know whether – I wouldn't want to have to be a Democratic strategist at this time trying to figure out what to do. They're in a terribly difficult position because their candidate is kind of a spent force. He's not the person he once was. He's not the person he was even a few years ago when some of us at least, began to warn that he was senile. Now he's really senile. So what do you do? I mean, the guy's really in a bad position. We keep hearing people say, we need to get him out there among the people. We need to have him have a lot of news conferences and be seen. And there's a reason why he wasn't doing that. The reason why he wasn't doing that is he can't do it very well, if at all. So they got a candidate. They can't, and I don't know how, with the party as dispirited as it seems now, and with leading members of it wishing he would get out of the race because they're afraid of what will come, that they'll lose not only the presidency but both houses of Congress, governorships, and the rest. And they're worried about that. And how do you then put on a convention which showcases this guy? I mean, it's fine. He can get up and read off a teleprompter. We get that. And he can read with some force and even with a certain angry passion and all that. But that's not going to solve the problem. The problem, I think, is insoluble, Brian. I don't know how they do it. Now, look, remember this always when we're thinking about these things and we're thinking about all these wonderful sugar plums that could come to the Republicans and the House and the Senate and all the rest of it and a huge landslide. I think that's possible. But remember, there remains in this country a great deal of resistance to Donald Trump. I was talking to my elder granddaughter just yesterday about it, and she's a very clear-eyed, independent thinker, and she thinks Joe Biden is gone, right? Just hopeless. And I asked her, could she vote for Donald Trump? And she said, no, she didn't really think she could. She didn't really hate him. She's not a Trump hater. But she was sufficiently offended by the stuff that he did that alienated people, has done over the time, that a vote for him would be a bridge too far. That's an example of the problem that Donald Trump, for all the glorification we're seeing during his convention, faces.
Yeah, the other thing would be, with Donald Trump faces is trying to be inclusive. But one thing they tried to do going in, you read the same stuff and you talked to more people than I do, but they wanted to soften his image this week. They wanted to show that softer side. That was before the assassination attempt. And now he said, I'm tearing up the aggressive speech, the humdinger, his word, and I'm putting together something talking about unity. So maybe there's another act in the 78-year-old. Final thought for it?
Well, I think he had been showing some striking signs of political maturity even before he was so obviously wounded and I think just frightened, which is exemplified by the fact that he endorsed Larry Hogan. Now think of that. Here's Larry Hogan, yeah, a moderate Republican, a man who has said he doesn't care for Trump, will not vote for Trump, running for Senate in Maryland, a blue state, having a chance because he was a popular governor there, a chance to put another Republican in the Senate. And asked about it, Donald Trump says, I'd like to see him win. And then our Aisha Hosni said, well, does that mean you're endorsing him? And he says, yeah, I guess it does. Now, the Donald Trump we knew in 2016 and even 2020 would not have done that.
I agree. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to get your analysis tonight. And we're going to have some big speakers, but the highlight will be the vice presidential nominee. And then tomorrow night, we'll see what the president brings to the table. And then we'll have Dana White out there, and we'll have Eric introducing Dana White to get to him. And I understand Don Jr.'s daughter wants to speak and give a perspective of the granddaughter. We got the daughter-in-law. We got what it was like for the son. So we'll see what it's like when, it's no longer – and we saw Melania's letter, humanizing the president. When you're shooting at the president, it's not some political figure. He's, my husband, Barron's father. And I think that goes a long way because people have almost forgotten that. Britt, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Always glad to be on with you, buddy.
Okay, same here. It's just it's our honor. That was Britt Hume. He's going to be on television all day today. Make sure you keep it on Fox. Meanwhile, keep it on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back to wrap up this hour when you come back from Milwaukee in just a moment.
Stay tuned for more of Brian Kilmeade live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, next. Live from the Republican National Convention, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Kilmeade, you're an odd duck in that I assume you're a Republican, but you're miserable.
Is that a question?
Not really. It's just a statement.
Okay, that's fine.
Have you slept?
I don't need to. But let me get
you to sleep
this.
Standing up?
If I have.
Yeah.
He's asleep right now.
Yes.
So that was my introduction on Gutfeld last night. Which was, I did not know it was going to be live originally. As Allison pointed out, I probably would have said yes anyway, but I wasn't even thinking for a second that it was live. And then I was watching the promos on Monday, and they say, Gutfeld live at 11. I'm thinking to myself, Gutfeld live at 11? Well, that's interesting. how could that be live at 11 if I'm on it and we're taping at 6:30? And then I'm realizing I'm on it, but we're not taping at 6:30. So not only did when you tape it, you don't have to sit for commercials. You're in and out in 40 minutes. Instead, we go on at what time was it? 11:15?
Yeah, it was 10:15 Central, 11:15 yeah. Eastern.
And then by the time we got on, then you had to sit for a commercial. It was a full hour.
So was that driving you crazy? On live TV because you never do that?
No, but I mean, once it started, I was great. And I was even great walking home. But I just said, as soon as I went to bed, I'm like, I'm not even tired. How am I going to sleep? So we slept for my ring didn't even register. My ring won't even acknowledge my Oura ring that I slept.
Oh, it said you didn't sleep at all last night?
I just blank. It gave me my workload, but it didn't give me my sleep schedule. So I was just curious, because when you have the O-U-R-A ring, Oura ring, they tell you the only one I go to is the middle click, and it tells you how much you slept. It tells you how much deep sleep, how long it took you to fall asleep, and how much REM.
Nothing. I will say, though, that you do need to talk to the manufacturers. It does not register when you may or may not take naps on planes.
Yeah, I got to figure out. It does register. Oh. I don't know necessarily if I know I'm looking at the right graph.
You've been reading your ring wrong the whole time, saying that it's been like just talking down to you, making you feel bad about yourself. And you could
it's
be reading
like,
the
I
wrong
told
facts.
You, you've gone past your bedtime. It'll give me recommendation. Between my watch and my ring, it tells me to stand. My watch is telling me to stand up. My actual ring is telling me when to sleep, how much to sleep. You've not had much sleep. Take it easy today, judging by your output. But I'm still calling my own shots. I just have two advisors with me. Inanimate objects.
Two advisors.
Just a quick note. If you want to see me in person, and Allison and Matt know how great that is to see me in person, I want you to see me July 27th, Saturday night in Strasburg, Pennsylvania. If you're far away, start driving. And then I'll be on stage at 7 o'clock, and VIP opportunities are available on the 27th. BrianKilmeade.com. It's History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's a show like no other. Whatever you think of the show, it's going to be better than you thought. And if you do get the VIP, it actually happens before the show. Tonight is going to be big. Tonight we're going to hear from Governor Greg Abbott. We're going to hear from Donald Trump Jr. And we're going to hear from the vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance. So far, things are really going the former president's way. I am sure he will come in dramatically and watch all the proceedings in person. And then Thursday night, it is all about him. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show from Milwaukee.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.